Hello, heroes. This is James here. I just wanted to talk to you guys really quick before we get started on this episode of First Watch. I wanted to apologize for you about the spotty schedule for First Watch and Critical Success. We offered these shows as a reward to our audience for supporting us through Patreon. And we are incredibly grateful for that support. It has saved the show time and time again behind the scenes in ways that I don't even know if I would have time to explain to you in this short bit before the show. Despite your faithful support, we have not been hitting our goals on getting these episodes out on time and ready for you. And for that, I sincerely apologize. From October through January, really, Kat and I have been incredibly busy. We had 3 conventions in that period of time, and a lot of visiting families and travel, all with a new schedule that we weren't quite ready to adjust to. Though I was able to prepare episodes of one shot in advance for my absence from Chicago all the way through December, I was not able to get together with Kat and record First Watch. In fact, there's an October First Watch that we recorded but wasn't edited yet, and all the blame for that falls on us. There's no beating around the bush about it. We definitely failed you in that instance. Even with all of our fantastic support from Patreon, right now One Shot and the One Shot Podcast Network are second jobs for me. It takes up all the time I have in between my normal assignments for my day job, 90% of the time I have when I get home from work, and pretty much all of my time on my weekends. It's a hell of a schedule, and one that I'm still learning to manage. I want to grow this network into something amazing, and I know to do that, I have to make a lot of sacrifices. And I'm very sorry that the Patreon backers that we have right now have been suffering because I'm still adjusting to this network's growing pains. I can't promise that we won't have more scheduling problems in the future. This is something new to me, and I know I'm not going to be perfect. What I can promise you is that I'm going to do my very best to make this network, to grow this network into something that I'm proud of. For the backers who can't afford to accept anything less than a fully professional operation for their money, I'm sorry to lose you, but One Shot and Campaign will be around for you every week for free, like they always have. To those backers who are willing to stick with us through this period of adjusting to our new schedule and, quite frankly, our new lives, thank you so much. You are making our dreams come true. And I swear this is going to be worth it. With all that out of the way, let's get to the show.
Good evening, heroes.
And welcome to First Watch.
I'm Kat Cool.
And I'm James D'Amato. And the show started.
I think that's how we start,
right? That's how we start the show.
It's been a while.
It has been a while. The best way to do this is to start off by scrying in on our lives.
Do you have a scry ready to go? I'm trying to think what I've been up to. I actually have one. It is a new year. Mm-hmm. It is now 2016.
It is 2016.
So I have just started up a new bullet journal.
Oh, do you do a new one every year?
Yeah, one a year.
You don't just fill the journal?
No. It's more useful to keep them so that I have a thing of every year of my life. I find it more useful to make a clean start. Some years we'll have 2 journals because of how much stuff goes in them.
Interesting. You're I'll have one. Going to be the type of person that people can look back on and check in on the thoughts of your life.
Yeah, which is going to be pretty embarrassing because most of them are like Peridot and Amethyst equal OTP.
Yeah.
Heart exclamation point.
It's just interesting. I know that I am never the type of person who could maintain a journal like that.
Right.
So it's just weird thinking of myself knowing that like, oh, there's no way anybody will ever be able to.
So, I mean, I've tried to keep throughout I've always wanted to be the type of person who kept a diary, you mm-hmm. know? I think they're really cool to have little thoughts about what happened during the day.
Right.
But that is not what a bullet journal is. I mean, like, it can be, but mm-hmm. A bullet journal is like a task management system, more or less, and an organization tool. So it's like, in its rawest form, it's a thing where every day I put down what I'm going to do and then check off with a bunch of different little notation marks, whether or not I did it, what changed, new information, incoming stuff. So I shift it around. I keep track of my budget. I keep track of how much water I'm drinking.
Right.
Things like that. And the reason I do it is probably because of the way I went through school, I learn way better if I write things down. Like if I'm learning a rule system, I will physically write down the rule system and then I'll remember it forever. I don't learn well any other way, and like digital things aren't good for keeping me on time. You you know that I don't keep my phone on me or charged or on. Or, and when it is on, it's in airplane mode, so no one can contact me.
It's amazing to me that you actually believe the system that you have right now is helpful.
The bullet journal system is very helpful, because like it, I don't respond well to like Google Calendar things. I get why other people do, but those sorts of alerts frustrate me. I don't like being beeped at. But if I check in daily in a book, that'll let me know what's going on, and it works.
It's so weird. I'm the person who just needs to be beeped at.
Right.
I need somebody, like, I am a person that if I could have a butler, I would be 100% a better person. I would be on task all the time and be able to do things if I had somebody monitoring my business and managing my affairs.
I mean, that's kind of the dream, though. You know, like, as much as I would not like to have a butler because that is weird. Like, the dream of a personal assistant.
Yeah, it's a personal assistant.
Sure. I mean, butler's better because Bertie Wooster seemed to... But Jeeves took care of his clothes. He made him the right food. He had the best hangover cure.
He knew the shirts. He knew the shirts to get rid of, the shirts to keep.
He also helped set up all of Bertie's friends with their romantic
interests. Jeeves and Wooster, they're so good.
This could be that first watch. Wodehouse aside.
In everything. It's amazing that we haven't done Wodehouse stuff yet.
The reason that I'm talking about the bullet journal, though, is that this year I'm trying something new. This is my third bullet journal.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, I had a bullet journal and I had a campaign notebook. I didn't use either as much as I could because I didn't take them both everywhere. So this year, I am keeping one journal, period.
Oh.
And it has been interesting to set it up. And the sorts of the ways that I'm outlining the campaign book with mind to the other goings on of my life. So it's like I wanted originally to have a campaign book so that like it would be a fun artifact to look back on.
Right.
But now that artifact will also have how much water I'm drinking during the day.
Yeah.
And whether or not I have a headache.
That's like a matter of probably scanning out those pages or whatever.
I guess if people are ever interested, but,
I guarantee you right now there are people who are listening who are interested in that and would be.
Sure.
Once campaign is complete,
I think
it is going to be a fascinating artifact to line up.
Cool. Yeah, so I've been setting up a lot of things like that. So, like, the front sections aren't just the typical things that I do. So I keep a few lists. I keep a list of presents, of, like, possible presents, so that when people throughout the year mention things that they're interested in, I write them down so that when it's time to give someone a present, I'm like, ooh, what special thing can I give them?
Yeah, for me, that's usually an Evernote thing.
Yeah, this is my Evernote. This is, like, how I operate.
So I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Now, normally I know you use electrical tape to mark different sections and things. And recently you've made the jump from Moleskine to Field Notes.
Incorrect.
Incorrect?
Yes. I tried to make the jump from Moleskine to Lectrum, which I'm probably not saying it right at all. It's a German company. They make cool notebooks, but they make them the wrong size. So I went back to Moleskine.
And what is this?
This is a Field Notes, but this is because I am still setting up my permanent one. So I need, I do always have to keep two journals. One, because sometimes, ladies, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah,
purses
ladies
are little. Purses get to be teeny tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't go without a notebook. I've tried like pocket-sized Moleskines in the past,
right,
but I prefer Field Notes. Field Notes brand. Quality.
you can trust.
Quality,
okay.
USA-made notebooks and other products.
Okay.
Available at Field Notes brand or fieldnotes.com or 400 North May. I like Field Notes.
They don't pay for first watch.
Some of them that you can get are waxed and have like non-terrible pages. They also have seasonal limited editions. This is one of them.
Oh my God.
When I go out in the cold, it's going to turn blue. It's white right now.
What?
But it's a heat reflective.
Oh, that's actually great.
It's really cool.
Stop promoting a product on the show.
I like this product.
Okay, but the home that this eventual book is going to be, once you've set up your system, is going to be Moleskine.
Yeah, it remains Moleskine, extra large. Unfortunately floppy, because they do not make gridded or dotted Moleskine hardback extra large.
Huh.
Yeah, I've tried the dotted last year. That was my campaign book. I like dots, but back to grids for this year.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if it is that interesting, I like it.
I kind of do. I mean, like, your life revolves around this sort of organization in a way that mine doesn't.
Yeah.
And for me, it is interesting to peek in on that sort
of thing.
Sure.
Yeah, so far, it's like, so I have the normal stuff, and then I have, a page of every NPC that we've met so far in campaign, which has been fun to go back through and gather them out of my notes. Brief note on who they are and their name in case I need to refer, like, Cliff Teth came up recently and stuff, and I wouldn't have been able to grab that if I didn't keep this sort of campaign notebook. It's amazing that people are making a wiki, but even then, I couldn't rely on someone to have nabbed Cliff Teth for me, you know, so it's like, and I wasn't going to remember that name.
Yeah, and it's like so hard to search that. Although I do think eventually the wiki is going to do a much better job of like how I could organize any of that.
The wiki's amazing. And people also keep campaign wikis for themselves through this thing called Obsidian Portal. I'm just going to keep promoting products. I think Obsidian Portal's fantastic. I've had GMs in the past who've used it. But again, digital doesn't work as well for me as analog. I also like keep it behind my GM screen and refer to it constantly. Mm-hmm. So I also have some common rules that I like to be able to reference, like suffocation, you know, stuff that I'm like, I always forget where it is in the book. It's more trouble to look up. But if I have a page that has the special rules that I know I'm going to need to reference occasionally, I can nab those. I also have like 2 pages dedicated to each character, which is one of the few things in the book not done in pen, so that I can change their stats as you guys grow. Keep track of your character themes and various other elements.
That's neat.
Yeah.
That's really neat.
I like it. So that's my scry. Bye.
Well, we're not there yet. I gotta do
you gotta
my
do,
scry.
That's how we're doing it? You do your scry.
Yeah, we do one and the other.
Scry it.
So I've been traveling a ton recently.
You have. You weren't here the entire month of December, really.
No, it was, and like, that's one of the most stressful times that I have been through. Like, even though it was definitely a vacation, I got to take some time off with my lovely girlfriend to travel to Costa Rica.
Ooh.
And I did this, I don't think people know, during the day I am a travel agent and I work at a company that does these tours. So actually, as part of my job, they sent me to Costa Rica so that I could learn everything about the tour. So when people have questions about the tour, I can go, oh yeah, I know exactly what that is because I've done it. Not only was it a vacation, but like I got paid to do it. And it was a surreal experience to be taking a vacation in that capacity. And it was also exhausting because our primary clientele is seniors,
yeah,
like older folks. So the days start at like 6 a.m. Mm. and they end at like 3 or 4. And then you go to dinner at like 7 and you're in bed, you know, before 10.
Weird.
Yeah, it was weird. It was adjusting to a completely different lifestyle for a while. And it was exhausting. I did get to read a lot of comics because of it, because there's just a ton of time on the bus where there is nothing to see. Mm-hmm. I mean, it starts off as Costa Rica is a gorgeous place, like, because it's mostly rainforest.
I've never been to a rainforest in my life. So that's like, I've always wanted to. That's the books that I most read as a child mm-hmm. were Rainforest Exploration and Deep Sea Exploration. So like rainforest, fascinated with it, terrified of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of where I am with rainforests too. I have been to now 3 rainforests, or like, you know, dense forest areas in my lifetime. I've been to Costa Rica, I've been to Africa, and I've been to Australia.
Mm.
And Australia was my first rainforest experience, and like, it was beautiful and cool, but it was also an awakening to the danger of like, oh,
giant spider.
There are giant spiders. I mean, yeah, there was a time on that trip where we were at these latrines and I'm like, oh great, I can use the restroom here. I walk in, I open the stall, and there's the biggest spider I've ever seen in my life. And it's like, oh, I don't actually need to use the bathroom right now. Funny how that worked.
Right.
And like in Africa, I actually almost died when I went to Africa.
I remember we were friends by then.
We were indeed friends by then. I was writing you emails almost every day in Africa.
That was a very scary period of time.
Yeah. Well, because those were the days that I could not send you any correspondence.
Yep.
But yeah, so like that was my last experience in a rainforest. You know, I got terribly, terribly sick. I needed a doctor helicoptered in to give me medication that saved my life. And so going to Costa Rica, like, even though I know this is a trip that I send octogenarians on to happily every day,
yeah,
it, like, I knew the stuff the actual that could dangers, be there. Right? And, like, it was a tough decision to go back into a situation like that. But, you know, it was fun. And there were, like, hidden beaches and, like, monkeys. I saw a raccoon eat a lizard. It was just great. I didn't think seeing a raccoon would be one of the most interesting animals that I saw.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's like the closest thing that this probably isn't going to make it in, but like I kind of have had an experience, but I was four, you know, I mm-hmm. was like,
because you went to the
I've Ecuador. Been to Ecuador. Yeah. That's, I don't know if people know that my mom's Ecuadorian, grew up there and, came over in her teens. And so I went to see the family's property there. I got to meet my great grandmother mm-hmm. and saw some like banana plantation stuff, chilled with a bunch of different types of farm animals. almost had an iguana like fall on me at one point.
Iguanas. Yeah. I saw an iguana fall on the trip.
Yeah.
Like it was crazy to see. I don't understand. Those lizards look so awkward. I don't know how they get to the places that they get
to. So they were like, you know, cause it's, I have a really, since I was four, it's like really vivid memories, but also I'm not sure how much of it fits together. You know,
right.
Like it's an interesting sort of thing. So like, I know that was at my mom's school, but I don't remember the school. All I remember are the giant trees and like watching an iguana fall and then noticing all of the iguanas.
Right.
And like, mom being like, you can get very close to them. It's fine because she like, that was her school and they just have them around, you know, and it's not weird to hang out with the iguanas because they're like squirrels. You know, it was
like
there's
slow squirrels.
Yeah. Yeah. So like there were elements of the main thing for me that was, different about the more rural aspects of Ecuador as a kid were that the animals were a lot more present and there were ones that I would associate with the rainforest and other things in a
right.
way that just like I'm the stuff up here. I didn't see a raccoon eat a lizard. I didn't see a raccoon, you
right,
know,
of
I didn't
course,
aside
yeah,
from chickens
different
aside from chickens and cows, everything was completely different.
Yeah. I mean, it was weird seeing at one point we saw a deer on the trip and mm-hmm. it was like, oh, how boring. Why are we wasting our time looking at this deer?
Yeah.
But you know, I saw toucans. Mm-hmm. That was one of the most thrilling animals that I saw on that trip because toucans are just a cool looking bird.
Yeah.
And they're cute.
Aw.
Yeah. They're vicious, too. They eat all sorts of things. They eat iguanas.
Ew.
Yeah. But then, like, after that, I traveled back home to Denver.
Uh-huh.
I met up with some fans, played some NPC.
Ooh.
But mostly it was, you know, the normal stuff, like hanging out with the family.
Yeah.
Doing Christmas
things. It was Christmas.
A lot of
parties.
You
were home for Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like, after the vacation, like, I am not sure that I would go back to another trip that we do just because the context is completely different and how much changes about your life and what I had to do to get into the position that I could leave like that was almost more exhausting. Like,
oh, wow.
I would rather do a trip under my own power where I'm, you know,
not, oh, I
I'm
see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
Where Mel is organizing things.
Gotcha.
And then, like,
okay.
You know,
I was like, you
enjoy.
Wouldn't travel again?
No, it's not that I wouldn't travel
if
again.
If I could, that's all I'd do. I love traveling.
It's like traveling under the rigid circumstances of a bus tour.
No,
is
that
just
sounds terrible to me. I've
different.
Never wanted to do anything like that. I just like going places.
Yeah. And it's like resorts full of old people. I mean, there are things when we went to this coffee plantation that was like a real tourist trap and they had like a ropes course. And I'm like, man, I would love to be seeing the ropes course instead of what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it was not as restful as probably it should have been.
Right.
But there were plenty of opportunities during the holidays for breaks. And like I did when I came back feel rested. And, you know, part of that was just the Denver trip, you know, feeling rested and like ready to go back to work here.
Right.
And not work, but, you know, our work.
Yeah.
So yeah, with that, let's move on to buys.
Buys. I feel like I haven't been buying a lot. Well, that's a lie. I mean, I've been buying Star Wars things.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel like those are purchases.
Because they're so necessary, it's basically like you already had them.
So I got like, I got the Book of the Sith, which I am loving. And by loving, I mean I finished it because it is like a 40-page book for 10-year-olds. that's, just a bunch of EU information about Sith stuff that like, most of it already knew. Mm-hmm. The parts that I didn't know are like, filling in gaps in Night Sister knowledge and connecting stuff up to things that were confusing to me about the Clone Wars cartoon. Like, I just didn't understand some choices that they made. But now, getting, like, meta plot old-time Sith stuff, it's like, oh, they're keeping... Whatever.
They're
it all makes
keeping
sense.
The good stuff.
Everybody and, should yeah. read those books. Also, my favorite thing about them... That's a lie. My favorite thing is the information. My second favorite thing is that the way this thing is presented, this 40-page nothing book is supposed to be the only remaining artifact of, like, Sith history.
Uh-huh.
It's so, like, Luke got it out of a holocron.
And it's, like, notes from a lot of different people,
so
right?
It's, yes. And, like, it's clear that most of it has been torn up and destroyed, so it's like these few remaining things, and it's what has been collected throughout the entire history of the Sith, so thousands of years, and all we have is these 40 pages, and they are in ridiculously different stylings. They are all conveniently, they fit in this one book, and all the pages are the same size, but the like one is on graph paper.
There's only one page size in Star Wars,
and like the handwritings are all different, and some have like photos, you know. It's just,
why did they do it in handwritings? They'd be writing in Arabic.
It's so weird. And even better than that, it has notation from four different people in it.
That's actually really cool. I mean, that's one of the things about the Dracula dossier that Ken did. Part of it is a expanded version of the Dracula novel,
yeah,
but it has notations from different characters who are deciphering secrets and clues.
Yes.
That's cool.
That is really cool, and it probably makes sense when Ken's doing it, but like but the people who have written on the margins of this book are Luke, Palpatine, Ventress, and Quinlan Vos.
What an odd collection of folks.
What a fascinating group of people to have each spent time going through and writing parenthetical notes in this thing.
Yeah.
Like, it just, who got it first? Why didn't you like cross out
others'
notes? You know, because they had to have seen each other's notes.
When did Palpatine had it, and who had it after him?
Well, that's
like a major document for him to have lost.
I know. So it's like, was he the one before
Luke?
He
must have been the last one to have it.
So like, did Ventress have it, then Quinlan had it?
Okay, that kind of makes sense. Yes, because Ventress would have given it to Quinlan.
Yeah, but not necessarily, because this is EU, and they weren't really, you know, like it's weird.
Oh boy.
It is weird.
That is a weird document. Yeah. So it does make sense that it's Palpatine and then Luke. Who had it first, Quinlan or Ventress, is a real tough call.
And apparently the Jedi one is just as much fun and has very sassy notes by Obi-Wan. So that
Obi-Wan
is my
sass.
Next buy.
I'm very excited about that.
I got a bunch of other Star Wars books, but they're all things like the script of the radio drama, and they're things that I am more practically using.
Right.
Not just getting for funsies. So what sort of buys have you been up to?
The things that I've gotten are mostly games, not role-playing games, but a board game and some video games. The board game that I got that I can't really talk about because I haven't played it yet is the Ghostbusters board game.
Ooh, but you've been excited about that.
I am excited about it because recently in Costa Rica, I got to read the IDW Ghostbusters comics.
Oh, cool.
And the board game is based on the comics.
I remember when those were coming out.
Those are good.
Cool.
I think I gave you my Comixology access. You might want to read them just because it's...
Well, I don't know Ghostbusters.
Oh, that's right. You don't.
I don't know
Ghostbusters.
You don't know Ghostbusters. Yeah, now you all know that I'm a fake nerd.
It's Bill, like, it's so weird that you are the person who doesn't know Ghostbusters, because it's Bill Murray.
Yeah.
It's the perfect intersection of so many things.
Yeah.
Although I watched Ghostbusters again recently, the way that movie moves and like the pace it travels at is bizarre
and
crazy.
I've tried to watch it a few times, but it's always been as an adult and around people who loved it as
who
children
loved it already.
So it's like, I think that's the flavor of like adults who haven't seen Star Wars yet, you know, that like don't get why people are this jazzed about A New Hope, because it's just like, yeah, A New Hope's clunky. It really is. And
Oh my God. I don't even have time for that. I will admit, Ghostbusters,
it's
upon
clunky.
Revisiting it recently, it's really clunky, and it's clear that it was filmed with much different sensibilities for storytelling than we have today.
Yeah.
Because they don't focus on any of the stuff that I would gravitate towards being interesting. It's like, the Ghostbusters thing is a path to celebrity for Bill Murray's character, who is the focus of the movie.
Sure.
Because he has this relationship developing with this woman.
Yes.
And a lot of the thrust of the movie is like him having more and more encounters with her as they have interspersed with these action scenes where they're doing these jobs. And in the background, there is a Cthulhu-esque Elder God plotline.
Well,
happening.
That's really interesting. I just recall, like, the few times that I've tried to watch it, that I got frustrated with the way that their relationship was going. And it's the sort of, like, old-timey movie relationship that I can't get behind anymore.
It definitely is that. He's pursuing her in a really weird way.
Yeah.
And it's like the things that are impressing her are really weird things to be impressing her.
It's not that I'm not interested in like Ghostbusters, I certainly don't think people are wrong or weird for liking it. You know,
right.
Like there's obvious appeal. It just hasn't sunk in yet. And I'm not sure that I've really seen it all, you know?
Yeah. All that said, I think the comics are great.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about the
board game. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the other thing that I've been doing, I've been playing more small video games. I've got a Steam account. I have a computer now because I had to get the new computer.
You bought Undertale.
I did buy Undertale.
Did you like it? We don't need to get into this.
I am liking it.
Okay.
The things, I wish Undertale had an easy mode where the mini game that you need to do to avoid damage was not as big a part of the game.
Interesting.
My one complaint about Undertale.
I feel like that's the entire game, but you think of the entire game as talking to people, because that's fair.
It's like, yeah, to me, Undertale is a great dating sim that has...
It's not a dating sim.
It's not a dating sim, but like, it's a relationship sim.
Yeah.
And it's a friendship sim. Like, you're developing and learning about these characters.
And it's an empathy engine.
Yeah. And you're developing that through choices, which... That is a game. The fact that you have to avoid damage from smaller monsters that you randomly encounter, that, like, the only reason that's there is that this game can make a commentary on other games.
Right.
And, like, I get that, and I love that. It's just because I'm a person who does not have a lot of free time.
Sure.
I wish that wasn't part of the game.
Yeah.
That said, like, that's the avoidance minigame is a cool mechanic.
I loved the avoidance. I
like it for bosses.
Sure.
Bosses, it's great because it feels like the stakes are higher.
Yeah. No, I grokked that whole game. That game was like the sort of thing that I want. So like, but I also get you not loving all of it. You know, like that makes sense.
Well, I mean, like the parts that I'm interested in are the parts that the game has done best.
Right.
And I haven't finished it yet, and I will finish it one day. It's just, it's going to take me a long time to finish it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's easily, like, I did a list of games for 2015, like top games of 2015, and it was on that list because it's a good game, and it's got the type of story in a game that I appreciate.
Right.
I like dialogue chains, and I like learning things about different characters.
Yeah.
And Undertale is about that.
Yeah, I spent so much time, to anyone who hasn't played it, there is a phone, and you can call this one character from, like, every part of the game, and they have a different dialogue chain. So I spent so much time just going around collecting all of the possible dialogue options because I love that character.
Right.
And that was like really fun for me. You know, that's the sort of thing that I want out of a game because I don't know. But it's like the sort of games that I'm looking for aren't, and people game differently.
Right.
That's what I'm into. I'm into just hearing what they have to say. Just want to know their thoughts.
And the other game that I kind of want to talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
Is called Pillars of Eternity.
Mm-hmm.
It's this Baldur's Gate, Neverwinter Nights style, RPG game that because it doesn't have the D&D license, there are a lot of unfamiliar classes and it's like a whole new world. And,
yep.
you know, I like discovering RPGs in that way. I don't know how long I'm going to hang with it and how far I'll progress through the game, but it's interesting. And
have there been new types of monsters and stuff then?
Yeah. I mean, they're like a whole bunch of, like, they still have elves and dwarves.
Okay.
But that, like, elves, dwarves, and humans, but then they have a bunch of crazy races that don't act like anything that I've seen before.
That are the standard things.
Yeah. And there's like clearly some dark evilness. And I'm playing a character, I think it's called a godlike. Yeah. The race is a godlike. And
so
like,
it's like an Asimar?
Sort of. They are almost like halfway between Asimars and Elementals. Mm. The different kinds of godlike are fire.
Yeah.
Death, the moon, and nature.
That's
so.
Why is fire there?
Like, it's one of those.
Is it like the fire of inspiration?
But it, no, it's like you're on
it's
fire.
It's just fire?
Yeah. It's
That's
just fire.
Great.
And the class that I'm playing is a. It's not like they had wizard. And they have paladin, mm-hmm. And they have like fighter types and a rogue type, but there are a bunch of like other weird ones.
Uh-huh.
And the closest analog I think is like spell thief or beguiler.
Uh-huh.
Because you're a
spell thief and beguiler are very different, James.
I know, but that's
oh, okay.
the closest.
It's the combo.
Cause you, it's a psionic class.
Okay.
You're like using mind powers. The way you generate mind powers is generating focus by dealing damage in combat. Don't.
Sure.
Let me, like, how does dealing damage generate focus? I don't know.
I don't know.
but you can deal buffs to your allies, and, like, there are a couple, like, melee things. But there are also things like manipulate an enemy.
Mm.
So, like, out of combat, it basically has a charm person, which is a really cool spell to have in a role-playing video game.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's interesting.
And so, like, there are a bunch of different ways that the character can manipulate people, and I'm still getting all of my fighter stuff that I usually like in these games. And the first couple NPCs that I encountered, like, they had rich and interesting backstories, and they were killed in, like, one of the
oh,
earliest
no.
scenes. So I'm like, holy crap, they just threw backstories at me, mm-hmm. and I didn't end up traveling with those characters for the whole game.
Like, yeah, that's interesting.
There was a moment where I'm being attacked by these raiders who follow this very particular god who's all about strength and power.
Yep.
And like youth and stuff. And they're protecting a ruin because it's like supposed to be a temple that this god protects. And I'm like, so wait a minute. Why does your god care about you protecting these dusty crumbling rocks? That's clearly not about what your religion is about. And the guy's like, oh yeah. And he turns around and you fight off the rest of his guys with him.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm talking to him and like, it's crazy how he winded up in this religion and then he's dead.
Oh wow.
It was crazy. And like, I can't wait to meet the real party
yeah.
that I'm going to travel with. And now, so it's just like,
is that one of the ones that you can do while you're editing?
No, you can't, and that's why I haven't played very much of
it. No, that makes sense.
But for people who like Diablo and Baldur's Gate and Neverwinter, like, it's an option. It's
cool.
An option that exists.
Yeah.
And it's pretty well done. I got it on the Steam sale, so it was like $17. Now it's like $40.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think it's probably worth the $40 that you would have to pay to get it.
But cool.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we'll hear an update in the future.
Maybe not. We'll see.
Does that conclude our Scry and Buy?
That is the end of Scry and Buy.
I think that means it's time for some sort of knowledge roll.
Yes, and I believe we're doing knowledge cinema.
Knowledge cinema? Well, I don't know if it's really knowledge cinema.
Buddy, we gotta have this conversation.
Yeah, but is that the correct, that's
knowledge,
the correct knowledge.
Lore,
it's lore.
Knowledge mythology?
There we go.
Knowledge mythology.
You nailed it.
Okay.
Did you guys know that Star Wars came out?
Yeah, this little movie franchise.
Yeah, this little indie flick.
Star Wars came out.
I'm sure that everyone is already sick of that joke, though. I'm sure every single podcast has made that joke.
Yeah.
So, welcome to us having the Star Wars conversation.
Yeah.
For those who haven't seen Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
Yes. There are gonna
this is the spoilers warning.
Yeah. So, like, take some time. maybe when we're editing, we'll come back to this particular point, and editor, make a note, and then we'll slip in the timestamp of when it is safe to listen again.
Yeah. Yes, clearly. We don't intend to spoil anything for anyone. I hope you go see it.
Yeah.
I hope it is not the worst experience for you.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking for a thumbs up or thumbs down from us, I think we can both go thumbs
up. Hold up.
That's not a spoiler.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
To know that we enjoyed it is not a spoiler.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. So now you can skip forward spoiler 3. That's approximately 1 hour, 37 minutes, and 45 seconds. Okay. Okay, so I, like, have digested this a lot, like, in talking to Mel.
Yeah.
But I don't think we have had our main digestions about,
have
like...
Have we not? Because I feel like I've talked about this a lot, but I might have just heard about this with Johnny.
Yeah,
and
you talked
John
about it, like,
and
with Johnny
a lot.
And pranks and, like, all of them. So,
yeah.
Like...
I talked to all the Johns. Got that out of the way.
Yes.
Then I talked to our lawyer.
got
that vital Star Wars conversation out of the way.
So originally, when you left the theater, there were some things that were bothering you.
Yeah, I needed some time to digest because, like, I don't know, it's an emotional period of time.
I mean, yeah, it was crazy emotional walking out of that theater.
I needed some time to digest. I have loved it more and more and thinking, I quite liked it, you know, like... I loved it upon leaving the theater, but there were some things that I wasn't sure how I felt about, you know, there's just thinking about, like world building wise and stuff that I was just like, this doesn't quite make sense to me. And I don't know why it was handled X way. Most of that has been cleared up for me, and the ones that haven't been, I'm looking forward to in the next movie. So like, it's hard to return to that place because I barely know what those things are anymore. And they were also things, they were things like, I don't understand how large I am supposed to consider. One definite thing was, this felt very small.
Mm-hmm.
Which wasn't a criticism at all.
Right.
I think it was great. It felt like a very small story with really, really high stakes. And if I compare it to, say, A New Hope, still kind of a small story with pretty big stakes, but it made the world feel larger.
Right. Actually, that is something that I wanted to talk about, because with New Hope, it does feel like the world is getting bigger every second you move forward.
Yeah. And I really wanted to know everything else about it. And I felt that there was a lot that I didn't understand, but that wasn't for lack of, like, storytelling, you know, that the storytelling felt pretty tight.
I mean, well see, with me, for me, the thing is, I don't think a Star Wars movie can give me a conception of the world that way anymore because I know too much about Star Wars.
That's a good point. Yeah, the only thing about this one was, like, the stakes seemed much larger and the universe felt much smaller.
It did feel smaller.
It's partially because they were really only in one sector. You know, they were in maybe two star systems, so that's, like, they were really...
And it's still crazy to me that, like, the Republic and the scale of the Republic is crazy to me. I don't understand how fractured the galaxy has become post-Empire.
Right. And the First Order?
Yes, the First Order.
The First Order felt like the underdogs, which is great. I love that reversal, but I'm not sure that it's true. You know, like, I'm not sure.
They also had another smaller group of underdogs, which
the Resistance
I kind
fighting
of
the
loved.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because the Republic or the rebels have become the new government order. You know, like, it's just I didn't have a sense of what that looked like against the rest of the universe. You know, I just didn't have proportions. But I am someone who's going to be reading all of the supplemental books now that we're past spoilers point. You know, now that I feel like I can read all of the supplemental books, that's going to start happening. And I'm pretty sure that's going to clarify a lot of stuff that I have hanging in the balance.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are some things, like, I had to explain this movie to my mom recently.
Oh, interesting.
And she, like, her complaints, and what I love about my mom is she is a very smart woman, but she is also a mom in that, like, for the longest time, I was a huge fan of The Daily Show in high school. She would refer to Jon Stewart as John Daly.
Oh.
And it's like, there was
Mom.
Great joke.
Luke, Star Wars.
Yeah, it's... If that was one of the mistakes they could have made. But so she's a person who you know, is very smart, but like is not too interested in the details. So when she has a comment about a movie about liking it or not liking it, or notices something, it's like a very blunt thing. All the details have subtly made this conclusion happen. She's like, I didn't like how Leia, it seemed like she was just doing the same thing and she's not in charge anymore.
Oh, wow.
And like, I sort of had to talk her through that. And like, we come to the Han Solo and Leia backsliding.
Yeah.
And like that line of, I went back to doing the thing that I was best at.
We both so did.
We both did. Like, oh my God. I love that line. I love how much tragedy is in that.
Yeah.
And like that you can really see it.
Yeah. No, agreed. Agreed. I was, first watch through, I was a bit confused about some Han and Leia decisions, but after I understood like the scope and time period around when they started to, it's weird to talk about spoilers because we just haven't been.
Yeah.
When they, the idea that everything kind of fell apart, not when Ben went dark side, but when Ben left to train with Luke.
Is that?
She says, that's when I lost him. That's when I lost you both. That is the thing that changed it. So it's like clear that Ben, I don't think Ben ever wanted any of that. You know, he loved his dad and wanted to do that whole thing, but he had to go down this path because Leia saw him and was like, that's Anakin too. You know, so,
I mean, that's interesting. I don't,
which meant that I doubt the relationship ended there, but that was where the rift formed.
The rift started.
You know, so it's like it's really interesting.
And I have to imagine that they weren't of two minds about that. I can't imagine that Han Solo was somebody who was like, oh, we can't let this kid go train with Luke.
No, I'm sure it was just the thing of like, it's it has to be his choice. Kid
because he was so young.
And
he must have been so young.
And he must have been asking to not go.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. Well, we don't know how old he is when they did that.
He's like 30 now.
What I mean is we don't know when they
totally that's all open. I'm excited to learn about it, and like I don't mind waiting 2 years or more. You know, I'm just excited to see what they're gonna I love every single new character. I am besotted. So I
except
we did
for
it.
That
we
old
gushed.
Guy who was of confusing importance.
The
fellow who Kylo Ren has like that pithy conversation with in the very beginning of the movie.
I just thought
what you were, Kyle, before you called yourself Kylo Ren.
Oh, I thought that those were just like Alderaanian refugees, which kind of like, I really think that those are Alderaanian refugees.
Right. It just seemed like there was a lot of baggage between him and that guy.
Oh, to
and
me.
I did not recognize that guy at all.
No, that guy's.
And it felt like I was supposed to.
So in him saying that Leia was his princess and always would be, I'm like, oh, they're all Alderaanian.
Mm-hmm.
So then when he knows Kylo, and he knows that he's supposed to be their prince and everything, and then he just kills all of them.
Oh, I like that.
That hurts a lot.
That's good.
That's like,
good.
That's pretty painful. It is the opposite of Leia's beginning.
Okay, you made that scene way better for me. Thank you.
You're welcome. So yeah, we haven't really gushed. We just kind of got into a level-headed conversation. I love everyone. Oh my God. I love all of the new kids. I love all of the good new kids. I love all of the evil new kids. I love all of the new kids who aren't kids. My God.
Finn. Let's talk about Finn.
Finn is amazing.
He's sweaty.
Constantly
and
sweaty.
Endearing.
He cares about everyone so much the instant that he meets them.
And he's added so much humanity to the way people act in Star Wars.
Uh-huh. Shenanigans. Han, Luke, and Leia love each other very deeply, very fast.
That's not what I mean.
Okay.
Finn takes time to be amazed about things.
Cool.
Nobody in Star Wars, like, does that. Like, it's not a moon, it's a battle station, but like, that's it. Finn would be like, holy crap, what are we doing? We need to, and he would like emote to hell and back.
Isn't it a space station?
Space station.
I'm sorry.
You're absolutely right.
We were going to get hate mail.
Your hate mail to catcool.
No, please don't.
Okay.
How dare you almost do that?
He
does. But he's amazed.
You know, he takes it. It's even Poe Dameron, who is still like, superhuman, you know, acting.
Goddamn,
is like
Dameron.
Acting cool. Like Finn, when he hits someone, like he freaks out, but like harder than Luke freaks out. You know, he's like at a 9 for all of this
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I love
how he's excited to be in Star Wars as the people watching the movie are to be watching the movie.
Yeah, I like stormtroopers. Like mm-hmm. I like old-timey stormtroopers, the ones that we fight. Oh.
I love these guys.
Oh, those guys.
But I am fascinated with First Order stormtroopers. You know, yeah. That like the whole war baby thing is heartbreaking. And it's having that be your limited perspective character coming into something. So someone who has all of these hard skills, mm-hmm. because if you read the books, he's very good. Like he was on the fast track to promotion. And the thing that he did too much was empathize. And he would like sacrifice the mission to save people.
That's interesting because he's also supposed to have not shown any divergent behavior before.
Yeah. I don't know.
he was like, there were no previous reports of nonconformity.
That's not nonconformity. I mean, cause that's them going through training missions and mm-hmm. learning what to do and what not to do. You know, that's not him.
I guess that's true.
That's not him defying an order. That's just him not doing something as efficiently as he should. And then Phasma says, no, don't do that. You know?
Okay.
That's like just a part of training. But he was really good at stuff. So it's like, it's different from Luke in that Luke was a farm kid. You know? But here we have someone with a bunch of stuff who also knows way less about the universe, it seems. You know, that everything that he got was textbooks. It's cool. I'm into it. I'm into everything about him.
I like the way that he took to people. I like how he got attached to different people very, very quickly.
Yes.
That's neat.
I like the ways that he's scared. I like the ways that he's brave. I like that the things that I think are his biggest strengths are stuff that they're not even things that he's thinking about, you know?
Right.
The things that make the biggest impact on other people are just what he is. And Finn's great.
Finn's great. He's injected so much into it.
Let's talk about Poe.
Okay, Poe is barely in the movie.
And I love him so...
He's great.
...much. This is predicated partially... if you don't know, he's in the movies, whatever. I love Wedge Antilles, and Poe is Wedge Antilles. It's clear that, and this is also canonical, that growing up, the person that Poe idolized was Leia. You know, that's Poe is our Leia, and he's just so cool. He takes all of the cool stuff of being confident, confident, quippy pilot, charming pilot, and he removes all of the stuff that I hate and instead puts love and respect and responsibility and warmth.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh my God.
It's like he is in any other movie franchise, he would be like a big damn hero who treats people badly and like,
and that's like the public perception of Han. I've never really seen Han that way, you know, but like there are elements of that to Han, and it's just like this just says no.
What I like about that for Han, if we can diverge and talk about Han Solo for a second.
Okay.
Han explicitly states throughout the film that he is interested in money and that's why he's doing this thing, but he's then always putting himself at risk. Like he always says that he's detached and is close at hand and at heart. It's great.
That's Han's such a stand-up buddy, and he always has been. You know, that's the...
Yeah, I mean, like, I've read plenty of Han Solo books where they imply he had a past where he wasn't reliable like that, but I choose to not believe it.
Yeah, well, but that's... And not. It's weird what is and isn't canon about him anymore. You know, that's like the...
Well, I mean, in the new Han Solo book that I'm reading
right
now.
Oh, the new one. Yeah, how's that going?
Which, it's fun. It is a really, really short one. But it's the same thing where, like, he goes into a situation and he tells people and is told by people, I'm in it for myself and I only really care about me. This is Greg Rucka's Smuggler's Run.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where he's like, yeah.
Greg Rucka, by the way, do you guys like comics? Do you like noir? Greg Rucka.
And he's writing a Han Solo book, so. He gets told and is told that, like, you're a scumbag who doesn't lift a finger for anyone. And then he, like, is hugely self-sacrificial and goes out of his way to help
people. But
that's
what he does all the time. That's the core of his character.
It's the best. I love that. And it's just, that's so great. Anyway, so going back, Poe Dameron, like,
doesn't even have any artifice of that. No.
And that's so refreshing and great.
He just takes all of the unrepentantly masculine, Mm-hmm. And takes, then there's no toxicity there, at least to date.
Yeah,
it's just
there's
beautiful.
Not been anything toxic.
And like, it's everything that I used to feel about Wedge is now put on this character. I love Wedge Antilles. I love Poe Dameron. And I'm so excited to learn anything about him.
And this goes back to so much of what I love about Star Wars. People talk about there being good and evil, black and white morality in Star Wars. And a lot of people like poo-poo that. Kat, I've heard you poo-poo that on more than one occasion.
I just don't think it's accurate.
Sure, sure. Like,
I don't think that there is lots of black and white in Star Wars,
stepping
actually.
Back from all of that,
sure.
And whether or not black and white morality is good, it is nice.
I just think it's irrelevant.
Poe Dameron is a character that is good.
Yeah.
And is interesting, and like, the flaws that people think are interesting, that like, oh yeah, they're really flawed and they're kind of a shitty person and an asshole, that doesn't need to be part of this character for them to be really interesting and really cool.
He might have some flaws. We might get to know them, but they have nothing to do with anything that, at least right now, would have been expected of him.
What I'm trying to say is that to have an interesting character, to have a fun character, to have a character that you can look up to and admire, they don't need to be a scumbag. We don't need to justify scumbags by telling everybody that they're heroes.
Right. And
this guy is a hero because he's a good guy.
Yeah. And cool and good at something doesn't always mean cocky. It can just mean confident.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, there's that moment where Poe looks at Finn and is like,
I can
we're
going to
do this.
Oh,
no,
that?
We're going to do this.
Okay, cool.
Is just, to me, that's everything, because he is so thrilled and excited about, like, this is the life that I live, that I got captured and interrogated and some random person showed up and I can trust this person with my whole heart.
Well, that's just like, I think the line for me that killed it there was when he said, I can fly anything, but it wasn't cocky. It was just like,
this is the thing about me.
Yeah. And like, he's clearly excited to fly, and how much he cared for his whole squad and efficiently led them. Mm-hmm. And obviously when he sees BB-8 again for the mm-hmm. first time, and he loves that droid, and he kneels down and he's talking to his little buddy, and then he sees this guy that he's seen once before.
it's
amazing.
I mean, what I like, I guess, I am excited to see a warm hero who is also
cool. I'm excited to see a love and respect-based triangle of heroes.
Yeah.
You know, they're just...
And that's what I like about it. And when I go, I like Star Wars because of good and evil, that's the good that I like. I just like, yeah, you're empowering us to like warm characters. And,
sure.
You know, scumbags are great. I don't need them all
thinking
the time.
Of good and evil is a weird thing for me to think of, because it doesn't exist without society and like different behavioral practices,
okay.
Right? So like the things that I'm...
All right, Paragot, what else
Star
do you want
Wars
to
is about,
us down?
Star Wars is about war and people, and war is the enemy, and people are the good thing. And love is the good thing. And they are doing a great job of setting that up. Mm-hmm. I also feel I'm completely in love with all of the villains because of their humanity and the good things about them. We will get to that later.
So let's talk about Rey. Can we talk about Rey?
Oh my god, we could spend a whole first watch talking about Rey.
This dreamboat. Oh my goodness. I love Rey. I love Rey.
Oh.
I love it,
to say that I love Rey. That's I was spoiled on Han Solo's death for over a year before mm-hmm. I saw the movie. Maybe not over a year, around a year.
Like, yeah, too long. I remember you talking about being sad about learning something.
I learned it immediately, like maybe January or February last year. I learned Han Solo's death when it happened in the movie, exactly that scene that Kylo was Ben. I got all of that from a French script leak. I like clearly didn't spoil anyone. I just suffered with this knowledge for the year, and it sucked. And like, it wasn't.
Did you then cut up like a bunch of your walls with a crazy sword?
No, because I will explain why Kylo does that. It's not just when he's upset. I will explain why he gosh darn does that.
I kind of love
if you hate
him
Kylo.
Just, I don't hate Kylo.
Well,
Ren,
if you think anything he does is in purpose,
head.
He's not. He's wonderful. Leave him alone.
No,
you leave
I love
my
him
perfect
being the
Sith
worst.
Baby alone.
Oh my god.
Okay, I don't love him as much as Rey. I don't love anyone as much as Rey. I don't know that I ever will. She's So I expected to cry at the Han bit. I also didn't know how, like, I think the first watching, I was just tense whenever Han was on screen because of that knowledge. Mm-hmm. And like being worried about how they were going to portray all of this final stuff with him. And like it, you know, that's in, as soon as he showed up in the movie, I was like, yeah, that is what's happening. You know, like, cause that there were, when you read a spoiler early on in a thing, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's not true. You know, right. But I always, this one felt real. And then as soon as I started watching the movie, it became obvious that, yes, indeed, that is exactly what's happening. The thing that you thought was
real.
Yeah,
I want to talk about Han Solo's death later because...
But that's not what I'm talking about. Yeah. I am talking about how that is what I expected to cry about. I expected to cry at the credits rolling at the start. You know, I expected all of this stuff. None of that happened.
You didn't cry for Han Solo?
No, not the first time.
Wow.
I cried a lot during the movie, though, and I was completely shocked, like, how viscerally it got me anytime Rey did anything competent.
Really?
Yeah.
Because she was competent in
constantly.
A lot of that movie.
I think the first time it happened was when she, like, bypassed when she pulled the thing off of the Millennium Falcon that let its power reroute correctly again. I think that was the first time I started crying, and it was such, like, a minor moment. You know, it's not like it wasn't even a big deal. And we'd seen her do a bunch of competent stuff already. But I guess the core of me realized that I had an archetypal female hero in a way that we've never had that.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
like, it's so dumb that, like, I really love Furiosa. None of that emotionally affected me. Whereas Rey is... the thing that I've never had.
Rey is the iconic hero. Rey is Superman. Rey is Batman. Yeah. Rey is this character that is the big hero and gets to be hero in a cool way. And we get to see her learn and develop. Like, I love the moments that Rey has, like, cracks show and where she has flaws. Like, when she accidentally released the monsters instead of shutting the doors, I'm like, oh, I love that this character, who is, like, so good and does so much cool stuff throughout the movie, the times when she messes up are the times when things explode.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Do you mind if I talk about, like, lady stuff for a
little bit? Please talk about lady stuff.
Well, it's just, like, so obviously, I'm sure other people have had this thing of just, like, oh, I have a female hero. I didn't know how much I missed that, and I didn't know how much I needed it. You know, it still makes me cry. A recent thing, I thought I had felt all of my Rey emotions. I was reading parts of the visual guide. I think that's where this is.
Mm-hmm.
Her AT-AT, I know that she lives in.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say what?
The AT-AT she lives in.
Yeah, I was like, was she cruising around in an AT-AT?
No. that scene was so impactful both times that I've seen. I've only seen the movie twice, but it's just like, full of details, you know, like, it's so telling about everything about her life. And she has a doll that she made clearly out of a flight suit that's supposed to be a pilot. And then you see her with the pilot
with the helmet.
And it's from that flight suit and everything. The visual guide gave context to this. So I saw the doll and I was like, that's really cool that she has that doll, that she clearly made that doll of a pilot and the helmet. And then the reading the visual guide thing said, like, Rey got this stuff from this thing and then made this doll of who she thought the pilot was. And then she would tell herself stories about the person and had this whole fictional, because they had a name. I forget the name. But very, very casually, the paragraph referred to the pilot as she, and I lost my stuff because I had assumed it was male.
Man,
you know?
It's women inspiring women. Well, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's really, like, it hurts that I assumed it was male because every hero I've ever had was, you know, like the majority of them have been. And there are people like Sailor Moon and stuff. This is so dumb. That inspired me, but I was already older. You know, like, if I'm real, everything that I ever cared about when I was young, I had
Batman
male heroes.
Batman and Indiana Jones. And
Batman, Indiana
Star Wars.
Jones, Sherlock Holmes, Star Wars. You know, those are the things that were most important to me.
So out of that, you get Leia.
Yes. And I love Leia. I love her desperately. But as a kid, I've always liked Han Solo more than anybody else. And he's always who I wanted to be. That's just like, I really wanted to be Indiana Jones. You know, that's like all of my college searches were for places that had good archaeology programs. I I don't know if you guys know this, but I like Indiana Jones. So like Harrison Ford roles are a thing.
Yeah.
That's he's like half of what inspired me, and the other half is like detectives. It's all Batman and Sherlock and stuff, you know. Those are the core building blocks of Cat, and they are deeply male things, you know.
Yeah.
I love Disney princesses. They just never, they were never what I wanted. Rey is what I wanted.
Yeah.
And it's insane to have her.
There's so much that I like about her.
She's going to inspire boys, and that's so cool.
But
there are going to be boys pretending to be Rey.
I mean, one of the most exciting things about this movie was thinking about what my kids' reaction will be to seeing this movie for the first time.
It's probably not even going to be a big deal for them it will be, because that's your reaction to Star Wars. But hopefully by then the world's just going to have normalized that, because I have hope.
What I like about it is it's providing so much foundation for those kids to build on. Like, I mean, Machete Order was such a rule for such a long time, but like, I'm so thrown out of a loop of like what I need.
I think I'm just
going to
show this first.
I don't know if I can, because I don't want them to look down on the original trilogy because of special effects.
That's interesting.
That's it. Because it doesn't look as impressive as that movie. That movie is big, flashy, and impressive. And it's like, I want them to get the messages from this first, but also they need to watch the other movies first to love them.
Well, I don't know that that's... I don't know that that's true, because they could watch them as teens and come to love them. You know, like, they can go back and you don't need to show them to them as a kid.
There are so many kids who like the prequel movies better than, like, grew up liking the prequel movies better than the original trilogy.
Sure.
And it's just like, I can't go through that. So, like, even though these movies are good.
I don't know. Yeah.
I
don't know. I don't have a kid yet.
Yeah. It'll be interesting when this trilogy completes itself and like we see what it is as a full product, I'll be able to make that call better, because like, it could be a thing of like, this is your Star Wars. This is what it makes you fall in love with Star Wars, and all the good messages are here. And now you get to go back and see what your dad cared about,
right,
and like why this built it out for me. So like, there are some things. Anyway, getting back to Rey.
Yeah. Talk about Rey.
She was
so sweaty. She was so sweaty and bloody.
She got
her
to
knuckles
be sweaty
were bloody
too.
The whole time. She spit. She spit a bunch.
I love how goddamn sweaty every person is in the new Star Wars
Except
universe.
Poe Dameron.
Poe Dameron is the
no,
flawless.
He got to sweat when he was being tortured.
That's true. Although we don't know if that was his sweat. I love how it builds her as like such a brutal survivor, and like I didn't know like what she knew about piloting at first, but like it very quickly got justified to me that like her entire life has been taking apart ships, so she knows what is valuable and she knows ships bolt by bolt.
Yeah.
And that to me is so cool that like she's It went when she was in those tunnels with Finn dealing with the gangsters who were coming after Han, like she is thinking about how this whole ship works as a unit and how we can manipulate that to our advantage, because that's the only thing we have.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like that sort of knowledge is cool. I love her trying to run away from the responsibility of, so that's like one of the most compelling.
So having the Force thrust upon you?
One of the most compelling stories from the Bible for me is the story about when, like, the only story about Jesus being a toddler.
Mm-hmm.
He has a vision of, like, angels who show him the spear that he's getting that he's going to be stabbed with, and, like, the weird sponge that Romans use to, like, basically give anesthetic to people who were being crucified. Like, he just has a vision of what his life is going to be and that he is going to have to die for people. And he runs to his mom and is scared.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, then when he grows up, there's a period where he prays in the desert to, please let me not have to do this for people. And there are a lot of biblical elements that get picked up on a lot of our different mythical stories. Like, people keep putting Superman in a fucking cross pattern, like, across so many goddamn movies.
And also, other mythologies that have roots at the same time as Christianity have similar stories. Well, but this is the one you know.
But the, I mean, yeah. And the one, the thing that I like about this is somebody wanting to run away from their responsibility like that is so human and so cool. And, like, one of the things that I suffer with a lot as an adult, which I'm sure people, you know, other young people, is just like the world is so big and so scary, and like you have to pay taxes. And, like there are so many things day to day that like are necessary for survival, and they're going to keep being there. And like that's what being an adult is. And I love the hero who has to run away from being the hero and like starting there.
That's so interesting. 'Cause like that part just didn't, it was fine. But like, it's cool that it resonated with you because it just didn't with me.
Those were the biblical stories that I picked up on. Like that's what I liked about that whole mythology.
Yeah.
And that having that moment was cool, and like having her reject and run away from like the violence of whatever history, if it is, even if it's not family history. I liked wanting to run away from that. And I like that, like setting up to where Finn like bridges the gap and like supports her arc, which is cool. It's not Finn taking over as the hero. It's Finn providing the support that Rey needs in order to become the hero that she's going to be.
Yeah.
It's just...
No, I think it's clear like... Yeah, it's really cool. That Rey doesn't... Yeah. Good stuff.
Okay.
Do we want to do the thing of what do we think Rey's deal is?
Yeah, I guess we should have that conversation.
Okay, let's do it.
I am pretty certain that she is Luke's kid.
Okay, I think she could be. I think she could also be Obi-Wan's kid, and I know what I would like her to be, which is neither of those things.
Okay.
Let's talk about why you think she's Luke's kid.
It really, I mean, breaks down to me, like, there's having
lots
that strong
parallels.
Reaction to Anakin's lightsaber.
Yep.
And the moment between her and Luke at the end of the movie. It's just like...
They share a very knowing look. She has obvious Luke parallels. She gets his music, blah, blah, blah. Got it. She's clearly has some, and I will say that like, there are some clear things throughout where like Maz looks at Han is like, what's the deal with the girl? And then they cut away. So Han knows what the deal with the girl is. You know that like, they know something is up. That doesn't necessarily to me necessitate that it is Luke's child, simply that Luke knows this person and knows what this thing is.
Yeah.
And that she was probably at whatever his little Jedi Academy was.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, a lot of people are also pushing the Obi-Wan thing because like...
Want to talk about that real quick. I'm not really interested in that. I don't love that story as much, but who did Obi-Wan get down with, girl? That's what I want to know about.
I want to know like... The time doesn't work for her to, she could be like a grandbaby.
She would have to be an Obi-Wan grandbaby.
If like,
which
Satine,
means there are other Obi-Wans.
If Satine hid a kid from Obi-Wan, then that is terribly sad.
Satine, yeah, but she
also
died.
Otherwise, Obi-Wan got down with Serene. We don't know about it yet. Whatever. I don't love that story, but the things people are saying, like during her vision, they have Alec Guinness say,
these are the first steps.
Well, he calls her name. He says Rey.
Mm-hmm.
But I love they recorded him saying afraid and took Rey out of that. So like there's him doing that. And then also she does a mind trick. There are other like, there are plenty. She has the Coruscant-y accent.
Okay.
There are reasons she could be Obi-Wan's kid.
But don't we think that she learned the mind trick from Kylo Ren? That's how I was assuming that worked.
I don't know and don't care. You know, like,
I actually kind of care about that because it is Rey. What I like about Rey is that we get to see her
practically
learn. Yeah. Like she learns. So there's that whole scene where Kylo Ren is clearly using a mind trick like thing.
He's
on
pulling
her.
Information from her and then she pushes back against that. it's kind of mind tricky, but if we take like Force and Destiny into account, which mm-hmm. we shouldn't, they're separate skills.
Right. But I like the idea of like, he tells her something, he does the Force at her, and he's like, tell me these things.
Yeah.
And like she pulls things from his mind, which is great, but I like giving her the credit of being like, okay, she is intelligent enough to sort of extrapolate the mind trick skill.
I'm not taking any of that away from her. And like, she could do that as Obi-Wan's kid. You know, that's not a like, that I'm never, you will never see me. I'm talking mm-hmm. about what other people are saying.
Right, right.
Two, you will never see me rob Rey of any of her agency.
Right.
I friggin' love this woman and she, earns all of her stuff. Back to it. There's also like a bunch of nice parallels in terms of, things starting with a Kenobi and a Skywalker being on opposite sides of a divide. And, people being allowed to redeem each other is nice. It's nice to be nice. It could be that. That's fine.
I don't see it as strong as the Skywalker connection.
I would prefer it to not be a Skywalker. Some people see that as like Kat, why isn't she allowed to be a Skywalker? I'm like, no, she's perfectly allowed to be. It's just not as interesting a story to me because like, I'm fine with things being space opera-y. Well, this is what defines space opera. I'm fine with things being soap opera-y. This is a soap opera taking place among the stars about one family, but that family has not gone away. We have people from it functioning in it, and we have one person in the thing still like dealing with the Force and dealing with redemption stuff and dealing with closing the loop of destiny.
And clearly and all having of that. A strong connection to Vader and that being like a huge thing.
Yeah, we'll get into
it. So
him.
That's covered.
It's covered. That's what I'm saying is that like we don't need it to fulfill the obligation of it being there. So like, it's exciting to me that Poe Dameron is nobody's kid other than the Dameron's kid. Mm-hmm. Finn is nobody, you know, like I would love for Rey to be nobody. I don't think she is nobody. I think that she is clearly related to this whole shebang. Here's what I would love,
mm-hmm.
but it involves talking about the prequels. So
I have no hate for the prequels in my heart because I watched The Clone Wars.
Palpatine is Anakin's dad. He didn't sire him as one traditionally would a child. Instead, he put did a bunch of creepy dark side stuff and put midichlorians into a vessel, which ended up being Shmi. And then Anakin was a virgin birth. Mm-hmm. And, he is this like, really force dense thing that ended up skewing to the dark side and started, some would say fulfilled, but started this destiny track of imbalance in the Force. And if we take things like the Clone Wars, pretty sure he left the sun out of Mortis, and that is the Fanged God, and that is a problem.
Right.
That is like putting the dark side above the light side in terms of a balance issue, right? Not a big fan of all of that. Anakin, no. Anakin Skywalker, I love him a little bit. But all of this was just a disaster started by this Palpatine schmuck. If Luke...
I believe his name is Sheev.
Sheevan, yes.
Sheevan.
Luke, if he is doing this from the opposite side...
So, yeah, you think... Or your
I don't know if he intentionally did it, you know, like, I don't quite know, but if he's going to the original Jedi temples...
Doesn't it kind of make her a Skywalker anyway?
Yeah, and Luke's still her dad, you know, like, that's not, it's just the, to me, that's a more interesting story because it's a different family, it ties up this Force stuff, and they're already having the Force conversation in this movie. That's a point that they've never done before. They've never just like talked about the Force, and I love the Force so much. It's really interesting.
Honestly, if they're doing that, then they
are fulfilling the destiny of the Skywalker clan, which is what like Kylo's into, and they're going to need to team up to do it together. And I'm going to lose my stuff.
The scenario that you're pitching to me sounds a lot more likely than Luke going out and have been making a baby in a traditional sense.
Yeah.
But I still see that as Luke Skywalker.
You can call
is her
Skywalker, but like she'd probably have whatever her mom's last name was.
And that's totes cool.
Yeah, that's my ideal because it robs nothing from the story. It lets us have another person and it keeps ring structure intact in the way that I want it to.
Mm-hmm.
Like Star Wars is about cycles, and this is the third act of a three-act thing. I know that Star Wars will keep happening.
Will keep happening.
But,
we'll never see all Star Wars.
But these first nine movies are the most important, I think, because
they're the ones we'll experience while we're alive.
Sure. More so because they fulfill classic storytelling structure stuff.
Right.
So like, we need certain things to happen within them to get the first story of Star Wars, and we need to resolve this whole Anakin issue. And so, like, having someone be a light side, virgin birth, chosen one icon, helps that. And so you said when I first proposed this to you that like robbed her of any of her agency or something.
So the thing that I am concerned about is people, there's already a lot of confusion. Like when you say Anakin Skywalker is a virgin birth to a lot of people,
they've seen the
prequels, they go, what?
Yeah.
And the article that I read was by somebody who understood that a little bit, but was confused about how it worked and said, oh, that makes her Anakin.
Ew, no.
So the reveal is that she's Anakin. And then like a comment that I read on the article is like, oh, please don't let the best strong female character I've seen in a long time have her secret thing is that she's really a boy.
Well, yeah, but this isn't that. She's just Rey, and Rey happens to be the avatar of the light side.
Right. So my thing is, I would be concerned and upset if that is the interpretation that gets slapped on that story.
Yeah.
Hopefully it gets explained really clearly
and
that I don't have to worry about that. But the scenario that you're pitching to me, that eventual future, sounds reasonable and practical. It still fulfills my thing of like, oh my God, she's obviously Luke Skywalker's
kid.
Yeah,
I agree.
And I like Luke Skywalker having some sort of progeny, even if he made it through weird force rituals.
I really, really, really like this thing. And I feel like, honestly, if George were to be involved, this is something that we might be getting. Like
George Cardass. Yeah.
Yep, that's who I'm talking about. Though, whatever. We're not going to talk about his comments or things that he said or anything. We're not going to talk about him. Love you, George Cardass.
Yeah, George Cardass. Class act.
But I feel like if he were telling it, this might be something that we got. Honestly, like, I don't know how much Filoni's involved. It feels like this is territory that he might be getting into. Because these are things that have to do with, like, some core Star Wars themes that have been there since the very first two-page draft, you know? But,
And he's always been interested in that stuff.
Yeah. But it's weird stuff. So.
He loves the weirdest stuff.
And, like, I have some hope that they could be doing it because they are talking about the Force. You know, as I said before, it's the first time that they've really done
that. And they've really talked about the Force in a way that keeps it mystifying.
And they're showing instead of telling, and I'm so proud of them. So like, there's a chance we could do this, but also it might be too weird, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. So we talked about Rey.
Yeah. So we talked about all the new good kids. I don't think we have time to talk about all the new bad kids. Like Kylo Ren might not even be part of this discussion.
Fine. Can we just say like Phasma, lover, want to see all of the stuff that hit the cutting room floor clearly because there was a bunch of it.
And I can't wait to see her in future movies.
Hux. Oh my God. That's like evil baby number two, my love.
Yeah.
He's a character that I already created in a game for a thing and, with some changes for very reasonable reasons that the First Order versus the Empire fulfills.
Mm-hmm.
I am so excited to see him on screen. My little red-haired general.
Yeah. He is obviously, I mean, if anybody knows my sensibilities, he's the bad kid that I care about the least.
He's my favorite.
But he's just fine.
He's the bad kid I care about second least, but only because we haven't seen Phasma.
Yeah.
Also, I love all of these bad kids so much. Oh my God.
Yeah, and then there's Kylo Ben, and
Kylo Ben.
Yeah, he's his own thing. He's great, and like
we don't have time to talk about him.
I really
do
like
we?
Adam Driver. Yeah, so I want to talk about. Let's talk about Han Solo dying. Because that's...
Are we sure we don't get to talk about Kylo? Fine.
We don't get. We got to talk about him later.
Okay.
We have to talk about him on a different podcast.
Fine.
Different podcasts. Okay. Han Solo dying. I was dreading it because Han Solo of the main kids is the only one in the extended
who has an
universe
actor who didn't want to be there.
He's the only one in the extended universe who didn't die.
Yeah.
Like, all of his kids died. They killed everyone before they even thought about killing Han Solo.
Yeah.
And the EU, and the reason that the EU eventually dissolved is, like, so much of the storytelling wasn't good, strong storytelling, and it was wish fulfillment within the Star Wars universe.
Oh, yeah.
That what makes that the most clear is that Han Solo lived in every instance except for that one weird Indiana Jones,
which I reread yesterday and I still love. And I love that, like, he says to Chewie, like, I always thought you'd be dying, you know, and I'd have to deal with this. I'm sorry, you have to deal with this, you know, and it's just like, I did not love that comic. I love that comic.
But it made me very sad. Any instance in where I think about Han Solo dying is sad, though it did give me hope that Chewbacca would hang out with Indiana Jones.
Well, but it was a long time ago and far away.
No, he was still alive.
Chewie was still alive?
He was still alive in that crash.
Right, but he finds their skeletons. That's the spoiler.
No, he finds Han Solo's skeleton. Oh. Chewbacca is in the woods seeing Indiana Jones.
That's right, he's Sasquatch.
Bigfoot. Yeah.
Ah, that's right.
So it's like,
I read a portion of that comic last
night. Oh, he'll just replace one Harrison Ford with another Harrison Ford. It's fine. And maybe, like, I actually don't know when the Falcon was supposed to have crashed, but, like, reincarnation and, like, regardless, let's not even think about that. Replacing one Harrison Ford with another Harrison Ford. So I'm
pretty into Harrison Ford adventures.
I was, like, very much dreading the death of Han Solo. I was dreading about finding out about Han Solo dying in, like, a canon extended universe thing that I would never find out about. I just was not okay with letting go of that character.
He was the one that I, like, even without that spoiler, knew was going to die because it's the most impactful death.
Well, he's the character that was designed to die.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you look at Empire, like, it has to happen.
He robs us of fun, and that is what you need to do, you know, like, it's to propel people forward, and he's someone who's always existed for the people around him, similar to Finn. Bum, bum, bum. Finn's not going to die until it's time for Finn to die, but that's but Rey's Luke and Poe is so Leia, and like, Finn is so Han.
Well, yeah, I mean, he had all those moments with Han. It's like, it was a thing that the smallest hint about a connection between Han Solo and Kylo Ren.
Oh.
And I was like, well, it's over. Like, and so every small hint after that was like
just
an emotional
build up
to this moment.
Yeah.
And
what,
like,
was it like to have the full emotion of that?
I dealt with a lot of the stages of grief throughout the movie.
Wow.
Just because, like, I knew Han Solo could die in this movie, and it was confirmed as soon as there was the smallest connection, and then, like, everything after it is like, Han Solo is going to die, Han Solo is going to die.
Yeah.
I was holding Mel's hand through it, and I, like, kept squeezing tighter and tighter as we got to the moments that, like, where it was inevitable and there was no escape. Like, when they were, I grieved for him at every moment it became clear. Like, when they had to fly on that mission, it was soul crushing. And when they had to go and place those charges, I couldn't deal with it. And then there's a goddamn vacuous pit and a tiny narrow walkway. And it's just, it was so hard. It was so hard watching it, knowing it was going to happen, and having every part of the movie tell me that it was going to happen.
I wonder if anybody who watches the prequels first has that with Obi-Wan.
Oh my God.
You know, because we never even had the option.
Oh, and Obi-Wan is the most likable character.
I love Obi-Wan.
Oh my God.
But, like, I only came to, I loved him as a kid, but in the same way that you love Galinda.
I haven't watched A New Hope since I've watched The Clone Wars.
Hmm.
So this is an interesting thing that needs to happen.
Yeah. Because I really, really love Obi-Wan. And I'm sure that watching that, it's clear that he's going to die, you know? And
yeah.
And it's by the person you don't want to kill him.
Oh, God damn it. Well, that's a new, fresh tragedy. That wound is clear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to watch it in that context. But so I cried for Han Solo throughout the movie, where you were crying about the discovery of a new powerful woman.
Yeah, well, I was feeling hope in a way that I just, like, visceral child stuff.
I was watching the swan song of Han Solo and being thrilled for the ride and also, like, regretting every tragedy in his life and feeling so sad that there was any sadness for this person who shouldn't have had to deal with it. Like, they should have had a kid who couldn't use the Force and grown up and had a beautiful, happy family.
Well, that's, I love, he, ugh. Like, Empire is one of my favorite movies, as I'm sure it is for many people, period. As I've said before on things, that it's like the first thing that I remember ever making me like romance. I just didn't like it. It wasn't interesting to me until then. And, like, part of it was just that, like, that man was following around that tiny, ferocious woman writing Han Organa in his notebook. You know, like,
do you think a princess like her and a guy like
me... He just
me,
loves her no. so much. And, like, it was always really confusing to me when people didn't get that I Love You, I Know was about him reassuring her that she didn't need to explain this to him. That it was, like, that, you know, that, like, he does so much for her. And the first time I watched the movie, I was totally heartbroken that they had to go through stuff that I didn't understand so that they weren't happily in love, you know?
Yeah.
And that they, like, weren't given any real resolution with it, because that's not how life works. Life is messy. And, like, upon realizing how early things started with Ben, it makes sense, you know? And I think that the love clearly was still there. They clearly were able to support each other through junk in the ways that were available to them. But, like, that was super painful. The fact that, like, he just didn't get to grow old with his woman.
Yeah.
You know?
It, and, like, I don't know. It lends so much to, like, there can be no happiness for, like, people like that for, and it's just, you know.
It's not the end of that story. You know, like, that's, we might get to see the end of this story, but it's a 3-part story and they were just one part of it.
Oh God. And it's just like the dark hope of Leia going to say, bring Ben home.
No, that was not, that felt so unfair. Like, not of her, just of, like, I don't know, that they just didn't get any solace. They got a few lines that really felt like Han and Leia there. You know?
Yeah,
like,
I wanted them to come together again and be able to rediscover their love.
Yeah,
and, like,
it's just the, I mean, she's...
That hug was good, it's just...
But she's always been difficult, you know, because that's not her sphere. She's more Anakin than Luke's Padme. She's Anakin. Yeah. She's an angry little thing who knows how to do war.
They just went back to the things they were best at.
She's not great at family. Yeah. Which is, friggin' love her, by the way. Carrie, killing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, we can talk about those performances a little bit.
I don't think we can. We are so out of time on
Harrison
everything.
Harrison Ford killed it. He was good in a way that I was afraid that he wouldn't be.
I was scared too, for different reasons with him. But, like, there were a few things that, there was the one thing that JPC yelled about enough until it just, like, sunk in and I was like, you're right. I hate this more than anything. I hate him shooting behind him.
Oh, I love that. I still love that.
Ugh. I love everything else that he did.
JPC did pitch a better scenario for it, and yes. I would have loved that more, but I still love that.
I can't wait. Hey, Fantasy Flight, I know you're not listening, but if you were listening, you'd be putting the hyperspace pilot skill tree into one of your things, because that is a cool talent tree. I was just like, that is a neat way to level up Han, to make him specifically good at this form of travel. And, like,
because that's always
that
been
was
his
awesome.
Thing.
It's always been his thing, and seeing the granddad version of it was neat, because it, like, took no time, and it was just like, Yeah, I don't know.
He just did a thing that, like, we were always told was impossible.
Twice, and it's super cool. It just felt effortless, and I loved everything about that. All of his expertise were really, really neat.
Shooting behind him is not a problem.
I don't like it.
So JPC did point out a better thing that should have been in the movie, that Han Solo should have shot behind him three times. It should have worked twice and then not worked once.
Yeah.
I would have even been fine if it didn't work twice. And then he's like, no, it'll happen. And then it happens. But I also don't agree with the base assumption that that sort of failure has always been a part of his character. I think Han Solo always succeeds at the most impossible things.
I'm not talking about failure being any part of his character.
That's what JPC's point was.
Okay. Whatever his points were had nothing to do with, like, I don't like wasting a thing on something that isn't a sure thing. There's no reason, like, you can know stormtrooper tactics, but there is no reason to take that shot and potentially hurt somebody without looking. You know, like, it's a weird thing to do. You got no signals that it was going to happen.
Han Solo is lucky, though. Like, I mean, there's so much about...
I know he's lucky. Like, it doesn't feel like... It feels like the movie showing us someone being cool instead of someone cool doing something cool for a reason.
I am okay with a Star Wars movie showing us someone doing something cool.
I'm okay with it. I just don't like it as much as there being a reason for that cool thing to exist.
I mean, there's so much in Star Wars that, like, you look at something deeply improbable rescues or, like, affects what's happening, and it's like, oh man, that's so cool. That makes no sense. Why is the universe lining up for these people?
This is different than that. That is so much a part of Star Wars that it is reflected in the mechanics of every game that we've played. Mm-hmm. They used to do it by having a luck smuggler tree. You know, mm-hmm. now they do it with destiny points.
Yeah.
Because like the force just makes things work or not work according to a weird balance game. Luck and happenstance are so much a part of these stories, and that is awesome. And that shot would then be an accidental shot to hit somebody. You know, like, all
there
I'm saying
ways
is that, it's,
that it could be much better.
Yes.
I just don't hate it for what it is.
That's where
I am with
okay.
it.
Okay. I think it's right now my least favorite part of the thing. I don't hate it that much.
That has nothing to do with Harrison Ford. Harrison Ford, getting back to it.
We don't know. What if Harrison Ford improv'd that? I'm sure he didn't.
You know what? If he did, that makes it better. that feels like a J.J. Abrams move to me.
Yeah.
But anyway, Harrison Ford, before the movie, I was very nervous and terrified because his whole thing has been projecting, I don't care about this and I'm not interested in this anymore.
Yeah.
And like, I know now that that's Harrison communicating to us.
Ew, don't get into
it. He wants to be done with it and we have to let him go. but like, I was afraid that he would phone it in. And I admire and love that he is enough of a professional and a person who still, I think, does genuinely care about stories to do a good job.
Yeah, that's the things that I like most about young Harrison, reading like Kirshner's stuff, like them on Empire.
Mm-hmm.
It's just whatever journalist was following around Kirshner and Co.
Blowing my mind that I can't remember the name of that book because I reference it all the time when I talk to people now.
Yeah, that it's just, we just took down
a journalist followed around the crew while they were making Empire.
Wrote down their conversations. So it's a lot of directorial and actors' notes and things. And like the stuff that Harrison argues for, you know, because like something really cool about Star Wars is how collaborative it is.
Mm-hmm.
That they're like, he'd come in
almost like a role-playing game.
He'd come in first before anyone else, like a professional at like 8 a.m when he's supposed to. And he'd come in and he'd be like, I don't like some of the wording in this scene and here are my reasons. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm sure that that's frustrating at times to deal with as a director. That makes sense to me. I don't know. I've never been a director. But
I plan on only causing problems for directors.
But so far, like, I haven't run into a note from him that wasn't, to me, the right thing. You know, like, he really, it made it feel like he cared about Han Solo. I don't know. But he cared about this story being done as well as it could and his part in that being done as well as it could, which is cool to see, you know? And, like, yeah. I just don't think that ever went away for that person. He's a professional.
Yeah. And so I appreciate seeing that. And, like, I have watched some recent Harrison Ford movies and, like, you know, it's not good, but, like, getting to see him do good work, it's just like, that makes me feel good. That makes me feel good about him as a person. And like,
sure.
It provided a great goodbye to Han Solo,
yes,
the character.
Yes, it
too.
Did. It really did. Generally, well done, Star Wars.
Well done, Star Wars.
We didn't hate you.
No.
We could probably...
The opposite, in fact.
Go on quite a bit more.
Easily could.
And I feel so bad for everyone who's just listened to this and been like...
Nope. This is what they asked for
you
this,
you think that
Kat.
This is what anybody wants to listen to? Oh, is us be people, like, I liked it.
People on Twitter asked for this. Maybe they didn't intend for this to be the result, but they are now stewing in the soup of regret.
Any other little, you know, there was one new kid that we didn't talk about, and that is not okay. We didn't talk about BB-8.
Oh my god.
Little BB-8.
BB-8, who played himself.
Or herself. Doesn't really matter.
Well, I believe in the credits it says, as himself.
Oh, okay.
Because
either
that's
which
how
way,
Jabba and R2 are credited.
Sure. Either way, the cast has made it abundantly clear that gender is not important in any conversation about BB-8.
It is absolutely not important.
Which I appreciate. It's just like, BB-8 is BB-8. Themselves.
Maybe it did say as themselves. I'll have to look at the credits.
That would be really cool if they did, because I appreciate that vernacular being adopted and English teachers getting off their butts about it.
Oh my god. English teachers, if there was ever a group of people that needed to shut up.
Just, like, shut it up.
Just shut your stupid mouth.
Except that language has always been evolving, please. Anyway.
Stop trying to kill language. I guess that's, like, in summation, what we can say about Star Wars is English teachers.
Stop trying to kill language. Really, I did want to just say about BB-8, though, that, like, please. I had reservations. I didn't know how much more droid love could enter into my heart. I love pit droids. I love Roger Rogers.
Oh, Rogers. God damn it.
I love R2 and C-3PO so much. I adore Chopper. And, like, Chopper was taking R2 and pushing all of his salty aspects. You know, that's... I didn't know that there was a droid archetype that didn't speak that was going to be able to get across to me in a thing. And, like, nope. I love that puppy. That little ball of fun is the coolest dude. Like, just...
Yeah.
I mean, please, in your fan fiction, stop writing him as a cat or a dog. Please make him a person. It's weird that he wouldn't be a person.
It is.
Fan fiction writers listening to this.
Do they make him a dog?
Sometimes people do that even with Chewbacca, and that makes me incredibly uncomfortable.
Okay, that's fucked up.
Yeah, and just don't do that. Also, don't do that with BB-8. He can be an exchange student. He can be Poe's mom, like... Poe's parents could have adopted somebody.
He's a great little brother.
He could be deaf, you know, that he could speak ASL. Like, there are so many things.
I much prefer him
as a little brother.
As a Tamlin.
Yeah, I think of him as Poe's little brother. Love BB-8. Do better, fanfic.
So
that concludes Star Wars?
That concludes Star Wars.
English teachers, stop trying to kill language.
Stop trying to kill language.
And,
it's a simple request.
Keep BB-8 human.
Keep BB-8 human. So that brings us to the last part of First Watch.
A random encounter?
Which is a random encounter.
Ooh-hoo-hoo.
So for that, I have brought out Ryutama. And
Ryutama.
I hope we do a bunch of Ryutama books just because – or monsters because
– they're so evocative.
They are really cool and different. And well, one of the things that we do with monsters at the end is, like, you know, we try to – come up with ways for them to be better. These are so different and like shocking, like it's going to be difficult to do that.
And many of them are kind of bare bones, so they invite that anyway. Yeah. You know, like the any way that you would portray them would be not necessarily improving it, but like expanding on the monster. So this
goes from 176 to 206. So if we could come up with a D30, I think.
How do you want to do that? A D10 and a D20?
I would actually just go online and make a D30. Okay. So that comes up. We've got three here. Mm-hmm. We've got a Hanwai Golem, a Mimic Hut, and a Factory.
Tell me again?
A Hanwai Golem, a Mimic Hut, and a Factory.
I'm most interested in the Factory.
Okay. I will now read about the Factory. These are magical constructs in the shape of small castles. They are said to have been made by most powerful sorcerers long ago, since today's magic lacks the power to create them. They don't have very powerful fighting skills, but they have the ability to consume weapons and spit out magical animals that it produces within itself.
Oh, how large are they again?
They're small castles. Sometimes they make deals.
Are they small, like small castles? Are they like just like
5 meter tall castle?
Thank you.
I'm glad that that was a question. Sometimes they make deals with towns in need of protection. Special ability, Magical Factory. On its turn, this factory may spend 5 hit points to create any magical animal in addition to its action. They may use this ability only 3 times in one day. Wow.
Ryutama, thank you. Just so, thank you.
That's a Howl's Moving Castle with extra stuff.
With it's better because it is 15 feet tall.
Oh, you're right. Goodness gracious.
It's a tiny little Baba Yaga hut. It's a tiny little buddy. I mean, he's big. Don't get me wrong. That's still pretty large. Like an ogre is large. Not like a factory or a castle is even small.
Yeah. So this brings us to the first part of our random encounter, which is, how do we beat this thing?
Is it upset with us?
I think it is. One of the false assumptions that I think you and I make a lot during First Watch is when we get our random encounter that it's not upset with us and we don't have to fight it and instead we get to love it.
We just talked about Undertale. Those were themes relevant to us. I guess it's upset.
It's mad. This is an evil small castle.
How do we know?
It's coming right for us.
It's just like it's charging ahead.
Yeah.
Okay.
We know this thing eats weapons. We are transporting a shipment of weapons to an orphanage. So the orphans can defend themselves.
So we put up a shield around our weapons.
Okay, we're not high enough level to do that.
Oh, we're not? What level are we?
You know what? I'm going to put us at a 6. I feel like that's the level that you and I gravitate to.
Okay, so I can make a stone wall. I'm going to put a stone wall around our weapons.
Definitely creates a magical creature that can knock down the wall.
Okay. What sort of magical creature does it create?
Okay, so this is the thing. We know that it can eat weapons. And we know
it's a magical animal.
Yes. We know it eats weapons and poops out magic animals.
Doesn't poop out. Produces.
Poops out.
It could vomit it.
It could. I mean, this is cool. I'm picturing, because this is an evil castle, and it's called a factory.
Yeah.
I think it produces a lot of smoke.
Yep.
I think it's got a lot of black stone and it has like...
Does it have fire?
A glowing fiery forge within it.
It has a calcifer happening.
Yeah.
That's... So, like, see, this is what I'm saying about Ryutama. The way the descriptions happen, you decide what that looks like.
Yeah.
You know, that. So we're already adding things to this that are not necessarily a part of this monster. So it does that and it produces a magical animal. When I think of evil magical animals, I mostly think of squirrels because I'm not very fond of them.
Oh.
So in my mind, like, there was a cute little castle door at the front of this castle and it opened up and there was a squirrel with a bow tie frowning at me.
Oh my.
But, I don't think a squirrel can knock down a wall. It could maybe climb over and grab something, but it's not that strong. So what did you?
Wolves are classic evil animals.
Oh, so sad.
So this would be a magical version of a snake, I think, is probably.
Can it knock down that wall?
It can climb over that wall with ease.
And it can grab a weapon and bring it back with its many limbs.
I mean, like, honestly, if I were running this game and I know that it can produce an evil magic animal, I would rule a swarm of evil squirrels as a totally valid one magic equivalent of one magic animal.
Oh, I would not. That would be one squirrel who is very evil and very magic.
Well, I mean, either way, it's still a problem of, like, the squirrel isn't going to kill you. It's going to take away the thing that it's going to ruin your mission.
Yeah.
So the squirrel is going to empower that castle to get those weapons and eat those weapons.
Yes.
So how do you stop a castle that can create its own minions? We're going to have at least three minions that we have to deal with.
Okay, I'm presuming it hasn't made some already today. It's a castle.
Mm-hmm.
Let's lay siege to this castle. Let's cut off its supply lines. Let's make sure that all of the people inside of it can no longer get food. We're going to block up the sewage system.
A living castle that eats weapons, so our entire mission
is not to invade a castle.
Though I do like your idea. I do love the approach of having to lay siege to it.
Yeah.
That's cool. So I think it's the way you kill this is doing the undermine thing. Like, I'll bet it's walking on, like, Baba Yaga style chicken legs.
Yeah.
If you dug a pit,
it couldn't get it.
It wouldn't be able to move.
Create
anymore.
A moat around that castle.
Holy crap. Maybe some of the greatest castles of olds were, like, these castles
that got stuck and then grew.
Yeah. What if they, like, trapped it and fed it and just grew it up into a big castle? We're already thinking about how you improve this monster.
I love that monster.
We need to defeat it.
The giant, giant castle that has for hundreds of years been laying dormant.
That's like Hogwarts, you know? It's like moving and living and all that stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, so laying siege to it, I love, and like doing the different things that you have to do. So undermining it, I like having to trap it in a moat, battering ram, like I think going in the front door must do something.
We've talked before, let's be real for real here.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about castles and fantasy and things like that previously. They don't make sense. out of the two of us, I'm pretty near a wizard. So I'm pretty sure I'm just going to cast fireball at this thing, and that is going to work. You know, that it's just like, you keep, if we're real for real, you hit this thing's with area of effect spells. Those are not weapons. It will go down to that in time. But if you do not have access to them, say you're a totally martial party, I think it is. It's about limiting its resources.
Yeah, and like, I like the idea of fighting a castle being a bunch of different people have to throw grappling hooks at it. Like, you need hirelings with grappling hooks to stop it from moving.
Yeah.
So you can besiege it like a normal castle.
So that's all dealing with the castle. We aren't really dealing with the magic animal.
And the magic animal makes this so much harder because the magic animal, like, first of all, that evil squirrel is grabbing your weapons and the evil snake monster is eating your hirelings.
Probably. Something that I love about this is it feels like it does it three times a day, period, because it is a factory. You know, that is the point.
Oh,
the
what
point,
if it has an army?
It's not. Well, but it could have an army, or its job could be to create magic animals that have nothing to do with it. If I were a magic animal, I'm pretty sure I'd be like a magic man. I'd be a terrifying thing to exist out in the world.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of magic animals are we talking about? Is it like a talking dog? Talking dog, no problem.
I imagine magic animal is a thing that is a specific classification in Ryutama.
Oh, in Ryutama.
So I don't know.
Right.
I don't know, and I'm not well equipped to answer that question because I haven't run a Ryutama game yet.
Well, I think talking dogs are great.
Talking dogs are
going to put
great.
That out there. I think it's very funny. I think you should just make a bunch of dogs, and those should exist in the world. And you don't know what dogs talk and what dogs don't talk. That's a great thing.
The first talking dog that I think of, which this is crazy to me, is the talking dog from Oglaf that can smell lies or that can smell evil.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's really funny. So like, that's a type of magic animal that this could be randomly creating. It could just be adding chaos to the world in terms of like Who knows what that squirrel can do? Or it could have an army of animals.
It could be traveling with, like, a horde. It's a magic castle that wants to eat weapons, and, like, I guess its only end goal is to eat more.
I got it. It's Japan. Mm-hmm. So this is about industry versus nature. This is a Miyazaki thing.
Right, of course.
So it's about taking weapons and promoting the forest. It's just, this is...
Through a factory. This is a nature magic factory.
This is Princess Mononoke, the creature.
That's cool.
That's cool. Yeah, it's a cool problem. In this story, humans have to navigate the weird parallel between, like, city and industry is technically a good thing for us, but it's not always that good for nature. So it seems like that's what this creature is doing. It's leveling that out. So hey, maybe if this thing starts attacking you, consider what you're up to. Are you taking over important forest land that needs to not be messed with because of forest gods? Since this is a game of Ryutama, that is possible, and you should look into it.
Yeah.
Consider why it's attacking you. It definitely has to do with that. Unless it's in the middle of a city, ask it about some ley lines if it needs things to be cleared. But otherwise, you gotta defend your cities. Humans are a reality.
Yeah, just because... it sucks to hurt nature doesn't mean humanity has to lie down and die.
I think that's what's up with this monster.
Yeah.
How do we improve it?
I mean, there are so many ways that were named. I would like you to go first with your choice.
I was thinking about this thing in terms of size and the, like, it's super dumb. This is so dumb. But I just, like, I've seen sand castles that are that size, and those are really, really cool. And the idea of a sand castle one.
Ooh.
And like aquatic creatures around it. And it's really neat to me. And I want to see that and fight that thing and like besiege it with water and stuff.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. I think that's cool.
It's a pretty simple and elegant solution. I mean, I loved what you said earlier of people trying to trap them with moats. Like,
what if there are little people in the factory?
I mean, that's an option too.
Yeah.
My thought is that for a human, when you hear about one of these, your king goes, we need to trap that castle.
Oh, and then it grows.
And
yeah.
You feed it and make it the castle.
The castle titan is a really cool titan to have to fight. That campaign, fascinating. Into it. Let's see. What else about it? What else could we do?
I mean, okay. So we've done corralling it and fighting it. Let's give this castle agency. Mm-hmm. This castle wants to devour war.
Okay, so it's not about industry anymore.
I mean, like, but that's a very specific kind of industry. But, like, if we're thinking of what is the castle and what does the castle want, the castle is an animal, and that animal needs food, and the food that it needs is weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So its whole thing is probably about eating weapons, and because it postulated perhaps these castles were made by powerful sorcerers of old, maybe this castle was created by a wizard who did not like war.
Yeah.
It's like, how do I get rid of him? I get rid of him with a castle that walks around and
eats weapons
and poops animals.
That's good. I mean, I'm for that story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really into that sorcerer, and I hope their half-life exists for, like, forever so that this can continue happening so that we can't make weapons anymore.
Yeah.
Because it ate all of the weapons and made too many animals.
I mean, maybe, like, that is a cool post-apocalyptic fantasy world to live in, where the apocalypse is, like, the death of weapons.
Wow. Huh.
Because, like, every post-apocalyptic story is, like, society is gone, and all we have are weapons.
It's really interesting to think of a problem being too many herbivores around. Like, that changes the way predators work, especially if we don't have weapons to fight them.
So we don't have weapons to fight. Oh, man, that does change things significantly. So what do humans do to stabilize an out-of-control environment created by too many of a specific kind of magical animal when they don't have access to the tools they use to destroy things?
Yeah.
That is a cool campaign for druids.
Yeah, I'm going to be thinking about that for a while because, like, yeah, just take deer. We have deer problems, and we are part of the solution. And if we weren't capable of doing that, other predators would start doing that. Wolves, wolf coyote,
that cool hybrid
animal. Have been hanging out in New York City, you know, that like, but they exist in New York and they shouldn't. It's just like that's bonkers, but it's predators are a thing and they happen when there's a need for them or a gap in a, like, so when if this were niche, to happen, yeah. that would start back up again. And, tigers were scary, you know?
I love this world already. I mean, one of the things that I think is inspiring about post-apocalyptic narratives and the reason that our generation has latched onto them a lot is like tearing down very specific comforting things about society. But I really like thinking about worlds that have undergone dramatic changes that aren't necessarily the same kind of, like, the revolutionary change of not having weapons anymore is fascinating.
It
and
also,
you could tell such a cool fantasy story there.
It makes me really curious as to at what point do we stop counting things as weapons? You know, because like a shovel is a tool until you use it to hit somebody, at which point it is a weapon.
Yeah, what?
So how much of this is just contingent on metal?
Yeah, well, I mean, what do these castles eat at the end of the day? Do they eat a shovel if you use it as a weapon?
Mm-hmm.
Like, does that happen? And like, if you use the wrong thing as a weapon, will it eat all instances of that thing?
Oh my God.
Is it the type of violence that it's witnessed?
So like, we can't, so trees start disappearing because we make spears. You know, that's terrifying.
Is it that trees start disappearing, or is it that like, we don't get
any
sticks
dead wood
anymore?
Yeah,
or like,
all dead wood is gone.
Yeah, it's if you use pots and if you use pots to defend yourself against like an attacking creature.
If you
creature,
take that too far, it takes away fire. You know, like it gets dangerous fast.
Yeah, yeah, and like does it? Yeah, there's so much that you have to ask questions about it, and like, are there more dangerous versions of these castles running around that like, no, we have to kill the one that learned to eat magic because that will make our entire society collapse. Like right now, we need our wizard to create a floating disc in order to boil water.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's some cool stuff in that world.
Yeah, there is. Cool. So
I think
we
nailed it.
Answered that. Crushed it.
Crushed it.
Ew. I think that's all we have time for. We should probably wait
the fighter. Yeah. Well, thanks, everybody.
Yeah. See you next time.